In December 2012, the White House gave poet Richard Blanco a difficult task: write 3 poems in 3 weeks, one of which to be read at President Obama's inauguration ceremony the following month. The short time frame was challenging, but the job also required Mr. Blanco to assess his relationship with the United States as a Cuban-American, an openly gay man, and the youngest inaugural poet ever chosen. The result was a poem called One Today, and in his new book, For All of Us, One Today, An Inaugural Poet's Journey, he discusses the process of writing it and then reading it in front of hundreds of thousands of Americans. It's published by Beacon Press, and I'm very pleased it has brought Richard Blanco to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Well, pleasure to be here.
How did you learn that you'd been chosen to be the inaugural poet?
Well, it's the now infamous phone call. I was driving my way back home from New York City, actually, to Maine, and I got a phone call through my agent at the time. Actually, a text, but it's still a mystery to this day. We're not exactly sure what the process was like.
You don't know who makes the decision?
We're not sure exactly. I mean, I would imagine it comes across the president's desk, of course. I know I would want to read which poet is going to be reading at the inauguration. But I think there's a certain air or shroud of mystery that I think everybody sort of is good with. It's more about here's a poet, not perhaps the details of how that whole thing comes down to be. But
well, unless you're the most famous poet in America, the question often occurs, well, why me?
Right.
Is that what you thought first?
What I immediately thought was, of course, there's some political affinities, of course, being all those hats, as you just mentioned. But I think it's also if you know, my work and my 3 books of poetry touch a lot about this idea of cultural negotiation, of finding my place in America, the idea of the American dream, what does that mean? And I couldn't help but think that the president himself, had he been a poet, would be writing about similar themes. His biography is more complicated than mine. So I think there was also an emotional sort of affinity there that it spoke to a lot of things that I think that might have touched the president's hearts and I think are apropos to America at this moment in time.
You weren't born in Kenya, were you?
No.
Just a joke. Had you met the president?
We met briefly, of course, at the inauguration, but that was very brief.
That was after the fact.
That was after the fact. And then in May, I was invited to the Oval Office where we actually had a private meeting with him for about 30 minutes. And that was splendid and a wonderful, wonderful experience. I was more nervous for that than the inauguration, I think.
Well, the appointment or assignment wasn't announced until January 8th, 2013. Were you allowed to tell anyone?
I wasn't allowed to tell anyone, not even my mother. I did, of course, have to rely on my people, so to speak. I had to obviously tell my partner. I had to tell my agent, of course, knew. I also had to tell my speaker's agent and a few people that I needed to rely on for feedback for the poem because, I mean, I had to work with a group of writers that I trusted, one of them being Sandra Cisneros, another one being my good friend who lives right here in New York City, Nikki Moustaki. So, you know, writers, artists don't work in a vacuum, and this was one of those cases where I really needed some real quick feedback on what I was working on.
Why do you think they wanted it kept secret? Because maybe they wouldn't like any of the poems you submitted, or because they felt that announcing that you were the poet might get a little bit of flack for them?
No, I think it's just a matter of protocol and how they do things. They hadn't announced any of the details of the inauguration till the 8th, I think. And so I was just part of that sort of, I think we're going through a fiscal crisis at that moment, one of them. And I think it was just about timing and the right time and place to sort of release all this information and roll out the plan, so as it were, for the inauguration.
So what does the role of the inaugural poet entail? You had to write 3 poems?
They asked me to write 3 poems. I think I'm the first in history that I was ever asked to write 3 poems. And part of that, I think, has to do that I've never had a personal relationship or even an acquaintance with the administration. So I'm not sure if they wanted 3 from me just in case so they could have something to check. You know, it was interesting, as I detailed in the book, there was also a very emotional process that I had to go through wearing so many hats. There was at first a sort of self-imposed pressure to write a poem that was a little more politically charged or in your face, so to speak. And so that was part of the emotional sort of underpinnings of the things that I was trying to deal with. But I think that the role, ultimately what I felt that the role of the inaugural poet was and is historically, is to sort of provide of this mission, visionary moment. At the, it's almost right at the end of the inauguration to say, this is who we can be, or this is who this is where the future brings us in a way. This is the vision forward, moving forward with this new administration. So I think that's what I ultimately understood the role of the poet as visionary, not as a political figure, but as a visionary, a moment of visionary in the inauguration.
I have spoken to a number of poets laureate, and they've said the hardest thing is to write a poem on assignment. Poetry doesn't generally arise out of that kind of a thing.
Right, right. Yeah, it is very difficult, and I think I've picked up a trick or two having to write three of them, and I'm grateful for the assignment.
And you wrote them in English and in Spanish.
No, I had them translated. Oh. The new book, they're translated into Spanish. It was too big, too important of a poem for me to do it myself. Ordinarily, I would. But I think what I found, you know, I think one of the tricks, if you will, or one of the sort of things that I learned in the creative journey of writing these is that in some ways the inaugural poem is a very personal poem, and you really have to dig deep into sort of, like any poem, it has to come from a real deep emotional space, even though the poem itself is not written in first person. But the more I've read the poem, the more how much I realize how much of my subconscious is in that poem and how much I care about what's in that poem. And I think that's part of the secret, is to find an emotional connection, an emotional doorway, that it's not just the occasion, but what does the occasion mean to me?
Well, there have been only four other inaugural poets, including Robert Frost and Maya Angelou. I'm assuming you looked at their work before you got started on your own.
Yes, certainly, certainly. I went back through all their work, and Elizabeth Alexander, too. I focused mostly on Elizabeth Alexander and Maya Angelou, who had been sort of the more contemporary writers. And I liked some of what they did. One of the things is that I picked up, and of course, you know, writers write in a continuum of art, you know. In Maya's use of the imagery of the tree, the rock, the river,
well,
I liked that.
She borrowed a lot from gospel music lyrics.
Yeah,
you weren't doing that. You weren't going back to Lorca or some Cuban poet.
No, I found that those elements of nature are very transcendental. I mean, they can transcend individual experience, and I felt that was the glue that sort of everybody could relate to, the sun rising or the moon or the or wind or the earth, and then. I liked Elizabeth Alexander's sort of small catalogs of people, of real images of people going about their day. And I think those two things influence the writing of one today.
My guess is Richard Blanco, he's written, I don't know whether we call this a memoir.
It's an
extended essay.
I call it an account because the big memoir, the real sort of memoir, is coming out by Echo HarperCollins exactly about a year from now. But this is more of an account. It's sort of like from the moment I get the phone call, the whole emotional and creative journey to the moment I'm driving back to Maine after the inauguration. And it's sort of very fluid and very reflective. And it tells the creative journey, the emotional journey, the spiritual journey of what that was. And I just felt I had to write it because nobody's written it. That was one thing. And I also felt there was a larger story here that isn't about just writing a poem. It's really a very American story. It's a very American dream, sort of rags to riches kind of story.
Richard Blanco's book is called For All of Us, One Today, An Inaugural Poet's Journey. Well, your story is kind of odd because, first, you're the first Latino immigrant to do this, but you were born when your family was in exile.
Yes, yes.
But not in the United States.
Not in
Cuban,
the United States.
Yeah. Cuban Spaniard.
Yes. I like to say, tongue-in-cheek, is I was made in Cuba, assembled in Spain, and imported to the United States. My mother left 7 months pregnant from Cuba. I was sort of did a pit stop in Madrid, where I was born, and 45 days later, we emigrated to the United States. So,
and then your family lived in New York, Florida. You moved to Maine when you got older.
Yeah.
Why Maine? Because Longfellow would live there?
No, it wasn't anything quite
part
that
of that poetic tradition.
not anything that quite
you like
that
cold?
Romantic. It was mostly for my partner's work, and a welcome change of pace, a change of lifestyle. I had grown up in Miami, so and I had moved. I had lived in Washington and lived in Connecticut, and moved back to Miami. And we just wanted, I think it's just something that came with age, just wanting a quieter sort of New England-type setting.
Earlier in 2012, before you were selected as the inaugural poet, You published a collection of poems called Looking for the Gulf Motel, which included poems about your Cuban immigrant heritage, your father's early death, and your own immigration from Florida to Maine. It got great reviews, and I suspect that's where the White House discovered you?
I would think so. Like I said, I think some of the themes in there are themes that I think would resonate with the president's own sort of story and navigation, cultural navigation and finding his place in America. And I know I've always related to his story in that sense. So I think they might have been watching me for years. I'm not sure, but that book is I'm most proud of that book, is I think it covers a lot of ground in a very mature way now that I'm 45 plus.
Well, few people can make a living from being poets. They usually teach. But you work as a civil engineer and not as a professor of poetry.
Right. I have taught at Central Connecticut State and American University in Georgetown. I've always switched back and forth. But in the last years, I was very happy in this balanced space of working as an engineer and as a professional engineer. I've never sort of let go of either or. I find it works great for me. I've always been a left brain, right brain kid, and I score exactly the same as standardized tests. Where I'm a little bit hesitant now is that obviously now I have this amazing opportunity to make a living as a poet and as a writer, and I'm wondering what's going to happen to my left brain and what kind of trouble he might get into.
He's a professional poet, but sometimes for fun, he works as a civil engineer. Many of your poems deal with negotiating cultural identity. Before you were selected as the inaugural poet, what terms would you have used to describe yourself? Cuban, American, some hyphenated thing? Latino.
I think it went through different phases, and I think the poetry is a way of working. Was a way of working that out. I think I grew up initially with, I think like most kids, with a rejection of your inherited culture because it's what your parents stand for. So if they dance salsa, you don't want to dance salsa. Eventually, it was a falling in love with that heritage, a maturity that comes in your early 20s, and I started calling myself mostly Cuban, and then finally realizing after my first trip to Cuba that really I'm Cuban-American because there's parts of Cuba that don't fit exactly with me either. So,
well, most of us, if we are hyphenated in some way, Italian-American, Polish-American, whatever, we take the American part for granted because that's the culture we live in.
Right.
And the one that we're curious about is the one that our parents or grandparents or great-grandparents
left. Yeah, that we haven't paid attention to.
Because that's the one we're trying to see that makes us different than all of those other people.
Yeah. And I got to say, after the inauguration, and this is something I detail in this latest book, it was an incredible feeling of finally feeling actually American. You know, as an immigrant or as a child of immigrants, there's always sort of this little part of you that says, well, you're not quite American. You're not quite – America's that little boy on the Brady Bunch or something like that.
Nobody's that boy on the Brady Bunch.
Nobody is, right? But in my head, sort of always feeling a little bit being the other. And that the incredible emotional and the greatest gift of the inauguration, this is why I think this book is really a great American story, was to be embraced by America in such a way to realize that an immigrant, Latino, gay guy was reading a poem to our entire country, felt this incredible embrace and acceptance and I got to tell you, a lot of love.
But this is not about just that. I mean, you include things like references to Sandy Hook, which had recently been in the news. And you mentioned earlier that you submitted three poems. You had a favorite, Mother Country, which is also in this book. All three poems are in this book. They chose one today.
Yeah, yeah.
You have an idea of why?
I think it was the poem that spoke in broadest strokes, and I think it was, in the end of the day, the right choice. The reason I fell in love with or was really partial to the third poem I wrote, because it was a poem I knew how to write. It was a poem that I was comfortable in. It's focused around my mother and my mother's story as exile. And of course,
And you brought her along to the inauguration.
And she was sitting right next to me. So it's about my mommy, you know. So, and it was a poem that, whenever we tread on new territory as artists, we're always a little apprehensive. But then I realized I saw the light, and it was author Julia Alvarez who really talked some sense into me. And then I went back to one today and really dove into it, full heart and soul, and really became not only what I felt was a good poem, but the appropriate poem.
But you were tinkering with the poem right up until the moment that you read it.
You know, it just,
is that typical?
Just to add to that old adage of like a poem is never done, I was so moved while I was sitting there waiting to read the poem that there were a couple lines that I wanted to tinker with, things that had fallen away in my revision process. And yeah, I was still tinkering with the poem and writing a few lines. I wouldn't say it was like a whole new revision, but just little things that I felt I was inspired by the moment to go back to that, some of that language.
We have very little time left, but I was wondering if the process of writing the poem and then reading it at the inauguration changed your relationship with your sense of American identity.
Almost certainly. I think it, like I said, you know, that I finally felt that I had, a lot of my work is about this idea of what is home, what is the meaning of home, how do we find that, what does that look like? And during the inauguration process and reading that poem to America, I felt like I was home. I was home all along. Home was in my own backyard.
Richard Blanco's book For All of Us, One Today, an inaugural poet's journey, published by Beacon. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. My pleasure.